Good evening. It's good to see everyone here this evening. Certainly good to see Diane back with us. I know she's glad to be able to get out and be with us. We're continuing our study of the book of Revelation. And last class period, I think Leon all but finished chapter 16, actually covered pretty much everything in chapter 16. We'll do the questions on that chapter in a moment. Is there anybody that needs questions on chapter 16? Greg does. And Nathan. Bill, I think Nathan does. Anybody else? As we're getting into this part of the book, as we have in most of the book, I just wanted to remind everyone that this is a book of symbols, a book of signs. Chapter 1, verse 1 mentions that these were things that were communicated, other translations say signified, indicating that it's a book of signs and symbols. And it's things that it says will soon take place. I'm not necessarily reminding everyone else of this as I am myself. I like to keep that fresh in my mind, that this is something that in the first century was said to soon take place. And as we get, and actually to keep myself also from trying to become too literal in looking at some of the things that are said, just remember that the symbology is very important in this book, in this type of apocalyptic literature. John was on the Isle of Patmos. He was exiled to the Isle of Patmos. We place the time sometime in the last decade of the first century, the latter time period. He sees the Lord Jesus in his present glory. Something that he had seen Jesus some 60 plus years earlier. When he sees him this time, he's in his present glory. And we talked about the letters that Jesus dictated to him for him to tell the angels of the various churches, the seven churches. Rome at this time is in control of this area. The Roman Empire is around this area. And Rome was a very idolatrous nation, empire. They had multiple gods, the same as Greece did. The gods corresponded pretty much to the Greek gods, maybe with different names. But as we read these letters and move through the book, we see that they're moving more and more towards emperor worship. Whoever the Roman emperor is at the time is to be worshipped as a god. And they're issuing edicts to the people that state this. And they're putting certain burdens, whether financial, physical type burdens, on people who do not bow down to the emperors as gods. So emperor worship is on the upswing during this period. But as we see in the great throne scene chapter, God is in control. He has not abdicated his throne for anyone, for Domitian or anyone else. And right after that, we see that he gives the book to the Lamb. We see Jesus there with God. So this is a message to the Christians of this time that no matter what the persecutions, how bad they're being treated, what kind of circumstance they're in, God is in control and his will is going to be done. And they need to understand that. God's plan will unfold as it should. And all of these books, we talked about the seals that were revealing things that would happen at the seals on the book. We talked about the trumpets as being warnings, and these things led up to the seven bowls of wrath that we've discussed the last last couple of class periods. This is just a little review of the last class period, where toward the end of the period, Leon was talking about the just prior to the seventh bowl being poured out, the dragon, the beast, the false prophets, three unclean spirits out of their mouths came and gathered together the kings for war. And it says that a place called the New American Standard says Harmageddon. Other translations render the word Armageddon. And as Leon said, you would think that's written in the Bible on every page by the way people talk about it these days, or not just these days, but in other times. And I was mentioning to Leon as we were leaving last week, I've also not only heard of it in various media or entertainment outlets as a place called Armageddon, but as a time called Armageddon. The area of Megiddo, Harmageddon meaning Mount of Megiddo, there's no real discussion of a mountain or a mount, but in that area we saw several things that took place through the old scriptures, the Old Testament. Barak defeated Sisera, Gideon over the Midianites, Saul and Jonathan fell and were killed in that area. Jehu over Ahaziah there. We saw Josiah was killed, an untimely death there by Pharaoh. I shouldn't say untimely, but was killed there at a younger age by Pharaoh Necho. So when this was mentioned to, or was written, those who read this or heard it being read would have known it was a place of battles, a place where battles were fought. But looking again, this being symbolism, we're not looking for a war. We should, or they shouldn't be looking for a war to take place in northern Palestine. They should understand, and they would have understood, this is a battle that will take place in Rome, around the area of Rome. And then after that, the seventh bowl of wrath is poured out, and it said, "It is done." With that seventh bowl, and then there's earthquakes, lightning, earthquake that like an earthquake that's never happened before. The city was split in three parts, hailstones up to 100 pounds in size, and like Leon was mentioning, I've been in a hailstorm where he was talking about hail that was softball sized. I've never been in a storm like that. I've been in where they were marble sized, and I don't really want to be in one of those again. But hailstones 100 pounds. The idea being that when the angel said it is, or when the voice said it is done after the angel poured out the bowl, and something like this happens, this is going to be a total destruction. This is leading up to the total destruction of Rome and the Roman Empire, is what we see here in this type of symbolism. So with that, that's the review I had for chapter 16. Do we have any questions or comments? So let's take a look at the questions on chapter 16. Where do we start? Sue had the last one, so we start with Joan.
What happened when the first bowl was poured out? A foul and loathsome sore came upon the men who had the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image.
Okay. Number two, Bobby. Okay. Number three.
What happened when the third angel poured out his bowl? It was upon the rivers and they became blood.
Okay, so we have the sea and then the rivers, so the waters at this point have become blood. Next.
How was God praying when the earth was formed and dead because of his righteousness?
Right, the angel of the waters praised him. for his righteousness. The evil one had shed the saints' blood, and he had made them to drink the blood. So he was praised for his righteousness. Next. Okay. Number six. No, they. In fact, it says they blasphemed God. Next.
What happened with the sixth bowl? What happened with the sixth bowl? The river Euphrates dried up. Three unclean spirits by frogs came out of the mouth of the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet.
And that dried up Euphrates, I put to prepare the way of the kings of the east. So the river dried up. Number eight.
Who will be blessed? He who watches and keeps his garment.
Okay. Number nine.
What was the name of the place called in Hebrew where these people will be gathered, Armageddon?
Number 10. It is done. Number 11.
What were the results listed in verses 19 and 20? The great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations failed. Babylon was remembered to give her the cup of wine of the fierceness of God's wrath. Every island fled away, and the mountains were not found, and great hail fell upon men.
Okay. And number 12. Right?
Why did men blaspheme God because of the plague of the hail?
Because the plague of the hail was exceeding great. So some would say that this would is a sign of an end time judgment, but the fact that men do not repent, they continue to blaspheme God, this is leading up to not an end time, but not end time, but I end time. In time, the downfall of the empire. And we'll see more of that as we go into further chapters. Chapter 16, before I move on, do we have any questions on chapter 16 after we've done this? Looking at chapter 17 then, chapter 16 tells about the fall of Babylon from maybe a macro or a wide angle view, possibly, of the bowls of wrath being poured out, and the fact that the angel says it is done after the last bowl, indicating that there's no coming back now. This is nothing's going to save the empire at this point. It is done. It is going forward. It's going to happen. We know that there's going to be a battle. There's going to be a war fought, and we know who's going to win the war ahead of time. We know that the Lamb is going to win. The Lamb will be victorious. But at this point, Rome is done for. It hasn't happened yet, but there's nothing that's going to stop it. It's been set in motion. There's no recourse here. Chapter 17, John is taken and he's shown, maybe if you think of it, 16 as being a wide angle, it maybe is zooming in a little more. He's shown maybe some more specific visions of the destruction. So if I would, I'd like to read the first couple of verses of chapter 17. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and spoke with me, saying, "Come here, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed acts of immorality, and those who dwell on the earth were made drunk with the wine of her immorality." So John here is introduced to a second woman. The first woman, if you recall, we talked about in chapter 12. And she was arrayed in light. She was pure. She delivered the man-child. We see that she appears to be Israel, but then is something different, but the same person, but it becomes the church. It's really the symbol of the redeemed, those redeemed of God's people, that this woman in chapter 12 symbolized. The woman we see here is just the opposite. This woman is called a harlot. In fact, she's called the mother of harlots. Harlots have been mentioned several times, and I'm reminded of Proverbs that has several mentions of harlots. Proverbs 6:26, "For on account of a harlot, one is reduced to a loaf of bread, and an adulteress hunts for the precious life." Chapter 29, Proverbs 23, "For a harlot is a deep pit, and an adulterous woman a narrow well." That's verse 27 of chapter 23. Proverbs 29:3, "A man who loves wisdom makes his father glad, but he who keeps company with harlots wastes his wealth." So harlots are mentioned, and then we have, of course, chapter 7, which talks extensively about what a harlot can do. The father talking to his son, "My son, keep my words and treasure my commandments within you." Goes on down to verse 10 of chapter 7 of the Proverbs, "And behold, a woman comes to meet him," and it goes on to talk about this harlot and how she uses her wiles to seduce people. And it says that in verse 27, "Her house is the way to Sheol, descending to the chambers of death." So we have mentioned in the Old Testament many times harlots. And this woman is mentioned not only as a harlot, but also the mother of harlots. She's clothed in purple, scarlet, gold, precious stones, pearls, those types of things that would be outward raiment that would be appealing outwardly to some. Each of the two is also, from what I've read, reading forward and what we've already studied, is associated with a city. This harlot is associated with Babylon, which is symbolic of Rome, which is symbolic of the lustful, sinful type of indulgences. The first woman, we'll see in chapter 20 of Revelation, associated with a beloved city, the New Jerusalem. To me, it's obvious that this harlot is the city of Rome. I started to say it's undoubtedly, but it's not undoubtedly, because a lot of people have had different ideas about this woman. Some would say the apostate church. Some would say the Jews who had rejected Christ. But I mean, I've got three people here that I can quote, but to me, this woman is associated with the city of Rome and the lustful, sinful life that it represents. Homer Haley says, "These two women and the cities they personify stand in direct antithesis to each other in character, position, and destiny." Summers says, "Here Rome is pictured as a great harlot who sits on many waters and practices her fornication with the kings of the earth." Talks about the kings. It says Babylon, drunken with the blood of saints and martyrs of Jesus, the great city which reigns over kings of the earth. So it talks about its association with the kings of the earth. And then Shelley says, "All of these descriptions let us know that this is the imperial city itself, the city where the beast, i.e. the emperor representing the empire, is worshipped, and from which have gone out orders to persecute the saints of God." If we needed further evidence of the woman's identification, looking at verse 3, John says he saw the woman sitting on a scarlet beast. And the beast has seven heads and 10 horns. And we've previously identified that beast as the beast from the sea as being the Roman Empire. So she is supported by the Roman Empire. We've seen before, and we'll have further explanation about the seven heads and the 10 horns as we get further into this this chapter. We look at verse 3. It says, "And he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, full of blasphemous names, having seven heads and 10 horns." Verse 4, "The woman was clothed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a gold cup full of abominations of the unclean things of her immorality." So we see that she's wearing that raiment that would be appealing to worldly people, to the people of the world. She's wearing the kind of opulence that is not the way a Christian woman would adorn herself, as we see in, like in 1 Timothy 2, verses 9 and 10, "I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly garments, but rather by means of good works, as is proper for women making a claim to godliness." This woman is wearing clothing to try to cover up her inward character, which is that of a harlot. Her golden cup, some would expect that to have something very good in it, because it is a golden cup that this woman wearing fine clothing and precious stones is holding. But the cup does not have anything good in it. It, as it says, it has the abominations of the unclean things of her immorality. Any questions or comments at this point? Proverbs 9 is another section. Proverbs 9, starting in verse 13. "The woman of folly is boisterous. She is naive and knows nothing. She sits at the doorway of her house, on a seat by the high places of the city, calling to those who pass by, who are making their path straight. Whoever is naive, let him turn in here. And to him who lacks understanding, she says, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol." So, regardless of how this woman is attired, regardless of the opulence, and this being symbolic of the city of Rome that had these indulgences, had the extravagances, regardless of all that, that is not the way to go, is the message that's coming out here. The cup she has is full of abominations. And then we see that John records what's written on her head, what he sees written on her head, and that is, "And on her forehead a name was written, a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abomination of the earth." I've seen in some translation it looks like mystery is connected with the rest of the name, and others, like the New American Standard, it looks like it's separate. It's a mystery, comma, and then Babylon the Great. And it really doesn't matter that much whether it's part of the name or whether it's a description. It is still descriptive as a mystery. And we think of a lot of times in our current language as a mystery being something that you can't figure out, you don't know. And that is, in our current language, that is a definition. But looking at what Vine's Expository Dictionary says, "In the New Testament, it denotes not the mysterious, as with the English word, but that which, being outside of the range of unassisted natural apprehension, can be made known only by divine revelation, and is made known in a manner and a time appointed by God. In the ordinary sense, a mystery implies knowledge withheld. In scriptural significance, it is truth revealed." So we will see, as we get down in the second part of this this chapter, the angel will reveal the mystery of the woman. he tells John that he will reveal that mystery. We see mystery mentioned several times in the New Testament, and it follows along with this definition that Vines has said, mystery being something that the writers, whether it's Paul or one of the other New Testament writers, says that I will show you the mystery, or that it mentions the mystery as being something that will be revealed, or that God can reveal and will reveal to them. So her head says mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the witnesses of Jesus. When I saw her, I wondered greatly, and the angel said to me, why do you wonder? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has seven heads and ten horns. So John at this point wondered about what he saw, but the angel says he will tell him the mystery. The seven heads I've read actually correspond to the beast that we saw earlier. The order is a little different. It mentions the ten horns and the seven heads in a different order, but it's still the same beast. The beast that you saw was and is not and is about to come up out of the abyss and go to destruction. Possibly this, the idea was and is not and will be, the idea of Nero being killed and then Domitian rising up sometime later as the second to persecute Christians, which was mentioned about the death stroke to the one of the heads of the beast back in chapter 13. The seven heads are then identified as seven mountains that the woman is on, and then as seven kings. Some have tried to identify these with individual kings, individual emperors, which is probably not the right way to do it, because you have to know, do you start with Julius? Do you start with Augustus? Who do you start with? And do you leave some out? It's better to think of seven, again, in this symbolic term of seven being the complete number. Five are fallen, one is, one to come. Just the idea that this is completeness, the complete group of the emperors, and not try to specify individuals necessarily with them. The ten horns, I was telling Leon, I was reading in Homer Haley's commentary that when you get to this point, he says the next few verses may be the most difficult in the entire book to interpret. I was not a good student of the rise and fall of the Roman Empire, a student of Roman history, but it certainly seems reasonable to me that the ten horns representing ten kings, as it says, who have not received their kingdom, would indicate they will receive their kingdom at some point. But only for a short period of time. It says 1 hour, which is just indicating a short time. And they'll wage war against the Lamb. Possibly, some talked about this as maybe being the rulers over the provinces of Rome, but more likely it's leaders over the conquered countries, the conquered regions that Rome had conquered. Rome never actually was able to create that into one unit. They were each separate, and they could hold them by military force, but they couldn't bring them in as one people. So possibly this would be the those conquered lands that still consider themselves separate from Rome, but they're going along with Rome in order to keep their positions, to keep their wealth, to keep things going in good stead with them. But then they turn and become, they tend to hate the harlot, which can happen as Rome started to decline and these kings saw that they had been been tricked. They saw what their delusion was. Then they turn and they start hating the empire. And looking at the way God will deliver his judgment on nations, he will use men, countries, governments to bring about judgment along with natural disasters. So these are all going in to bring the judgment on Rome at the hands of these other nations, where Rome, again, is the city that is being supported by the beast, which is the empire. And it says, as it said earlier, that it's on many waters, which would again lead to the idea of these different peoples, different nations, different tongues. Any questions or comments at this point? Leon, have I hit this close to the target?
A lot of things are just coming together, as you say. You have indicators throughout the book, but it is expected the reader, when he gets here, will be able to connect with what has been said, so he knows what beast this is and what it's been doing and why it's going to receive the wrath of God. And then connect it back to Daniel 7 and Daniel 2.
Right. So with that, and this being one of the more difficult chapters, I'm surprised I got through it this quick, but we see that these, along with the natural disasters that happened to Rome, the internal strife that happened, the civil unrest, and then these outside nations and kingdoms, we see that God is going to win out. The Lamb is going to win. We know the outcome before it happens. And that's what the message to the Christians in the first century would be. Those who would say this is the apostate church, or some have even tried to tie it into the Catholic Church, and that would be of no benefit to the Christians of the first century to hear that. That being said, this happened to Rome, but it's nothing to say that it can't happen to other nations also. If they do the same things that Rome did, they can receive judgment from God, and it can be of the form of men, governments, nations, and natural disasters that can be used. So it can be of comfort to us also, and a warning to us also, that we need to persevere and we need to continue in God's word, no matter what kind of outside influence is coming on. Any other comments or questions? Well, I guess with that, we can move on to the questions on chapter 17. Does anybody need a copy of those? We have several more that need copies of the questions on 17. I think we've got time probably to get through the questions before the end of the period. Brady, you were the last one on the chapter 16 questions. Next. Many waters. Number two.
What have the kings of the earth done with her? Committed sexual immorality.
Okay. Number three. Scarlet beast with blasphemous name, seven heads and ten horns. Next, number four.
In her hand, a gold cup full of abomination and unclean things of her immorality.
Okay. Number five.
What was written on her forehead, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abomination of her.
Okay. Richard.
Oh, what was the woman drunken?
Doctor?
When it is stated that all would marvel at the beast, who was said to be the exception? Those on earth whose names weren't written in the book of life.
The exception of the ones that would marvel? Have I read the question incorrectly? The ones whose name was not written in the book of life would marvel, wouldn't they? Is that right? And so the exception would be those that were written in the book of life. Is that the way you answered it, Rocky? I might have missed what you said. Okay. So the ones who are the exception to wondering would be the ones who were sealed, the ones whose name were in the book of life. Okay. Okay, and I didn't mention the idea that Rome is built in an area of seven hills along the river. I didn't mention that, but probably everybody here knew that besides me until I read it recently. So. Okay. And number 10.
Against whom was they war, and who would be triumphant? Verse 14. These will make the war with Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, for he is Lord of lords, and King of kings. And those who are with him are called chosen and faithful.
Okay. So they will make war with the Lamb, but as I said, we know the outcome. The Lamb will win. Next. Down here in front, Greg.
What do the waters where the harlot sat represent? The waters which you saw where the harlot sits are people, multitudes, nations, and tongues.
Okay. Number 12. Aaron.
What would the 10 horns of the beast do to the harlot? They will hate the harlot, make her desolate and naked, and eat the flesh and burn her with fire.
Okay.
Who is the woman John saw? The great city which reigns over the kings of the earth.
Okay. So Jerusalem did not reign over the kings of the earth, and was not really at this time what would be considered a great city. The city related to, and also at this time, Babylon had declined, so the city Rome is the one that's being symbolized here. And we see even today, as long as political alliances can be made and a country can benefit from its alliance with another country, they will continue in that. But when they can no longer have that benefit, they will turn against that first country. And that's the kind of thing we're seeing here with the kings that will turn against her and burn her up with fire. So I think we're just about time to ring the bell. Don't want to start on chapter 18 yet, but I appreciate the attention and input. And if there are any other questions or comments, Aaron? There are those that look at this as written at an earlier time, prior to AD 70, and they're trying to position this as being written during the reign of Nero, and yes, they look at this as being the destruction of Jerusalem. There are different views, but the preponderance of evidence I've seen show it to be at the end of the first century, during Domitian's reign, when this happened. But for one thing, we talked about previously that the fact that John was exiled is something that Domitian had done and would do. Nero would have just had him beheaded on the spot, probably, based on what he had done. We don't know for a fact, but just based on what he had done with others. So those who look at an early date do look at this as a Jerusalem prophecy rather than a Rome prophecy. Good question. And there's some that look at it as Washington or some others even today, which just completely misses the point, I believe.